I came across these files, and I remember looking at the notes that were taken by Paul Cerny. And in those files, I started to read this incredible story of a gentleman that was, as you mentioned, was up there in the Tahoe National Forest up there by Cisco Grove, close to, going toward Truckee, toward the Reno border. And he had one incredible story where he was deer hunting and came across these beings that were trying to capture him in this incredible ordeal. So I always wanted to meet this gentleman, and through another former colleague, I was able to meet with him and his family back in 2005, almost 41 years from the time that he had his first encounter, which was September 4th of 1964.
Nope. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, what was amazing, George, is that his story is very much has stuck to the same story, but it was just being there and talking with him and meeting his family, and then also having the great fortune of working with Noe that we were able to put the Mr. Don Shrum's story into a book.
Noe, tell me this: how tough was it to win his confidence, Donald Shrum's confidence? We'll get into what happened to him, not only out there in the forest, but subsequently with the Air Force and ridicule and this so-called investigation they did. I would imagine he was a little gun-shy.
Yes, George, one of the key factors in this was that Mr. Shrum worked in the for a company that built missiles for the U.S. military back in the 1960s, the Aerojet Corporation of Sacramento, California. So he actually had never, his name had never been given in any of the UFO witness accounts of the 60s following this UFO incident. And although most of the details of the case had been released, there was never an actual name of the witness ever given. In fact, this is the first book that's ever been done by anybody regarding this case. And Mr. Shrum, because of his familiarity with Reuben as MUFON's state director for Northern California, and because Reuben spent a lot of time with him there in his home and was a guest of his at his home, he was more than willing to open up to us and to tell us details that he had never previously released, including a lot of interesting details that came out during a session of regressive hypnotherapy that he underwent in the 70s. So it was just the right time. He's reached an age where he wants to make full disclosure. He's got some significant health problems, obstacles that are now facing him. And it's like a lot of other witnesses in major UFO cases that really are hesitant to come out with the truth until they get, close to the end of their lives, and they feel that, like Mr. Shrum, this is a case that really, really needs to be known by the public in its entirety.
But he was worried that because he works in a sensitive industry, that if this comes out, he'd be ridiculed, lose his job. So although he cooperated with some investigators, he never wanted his name associated with this. He's not trying to get rich off of it or, have somebody make a movie out of his story, right?
That's correct. He was actually a welder and a painter for a lot of the Polaris and Titan missiles that were being built by Aerojet in its Sacramento factory back in the early 60s. And it was a sensitive job, of course, because of the nature of the work and the defense contracts that Aerojet had at the time. And so he was convinced that if he spoke publicly about his UFO encounter, that there would be repercussions in his job. In fact, all three gentlemen that were hunting that evening in the Tahoe National Forest, Mr. Shrum, Mr. Alvarez, and Mr. Trueblood, they were all three employees of Aerojet. There are some bizarre connections that we can explore as we go on regarding, there's kind of a backstory regarding the Aerojet Corporation. But, yes, that's absolutely it, and that's the reason why he never fully disclosed all the details of the case and did not ever link his name or the name of his two hunting companions with what actually happened until just now in preparation for this book.
Okay, well, let's tell the story. Reuben, why don't you start it off? It's 1964. Mr. Donald Trump and two friends decided to go deer hunting, bows and arrows, up in Northern California. Take it from there.
Yes. Well, it was, again, September 4th, 1964. Both he and his friends went deer hunting, and they were going to use bows and arrows. During that particular season, only bows and arrows were permitted, not rifles. And as these gentlemen were camping out, they started their hunt early during the day. And later, it was toward the evening, they continued their hunt. Dawn went up a ravine, and basically these guys had no walkie-talkies, but they had to be, you know, they could see each other visually. But Dawn started to started walking up a ravine. And then he told him, and his other two friends yelled at him and said, "Why don't you meet us on the other side?" Well, what happened was that ravine turned out to be a lot further. And so it started to get very dark. And so because of that area, and that was known for bears and mountain lions and that, and for his safety, he found a tree. That he decided that he was going to climb up and stay there for protection. That's what a number of hunters do in case they can't get back. They want to protect themselves from predators. So as he climbed up the tree and started setting his area of safety, it started to get dark. And then out in the distance, it was about towards around 7 p.m. And then there was a light that came out toward his direction, and as it got darker, he noticed the light getting closer, and he thought it was a helicopter. And then he didn't hear any noise, and the light came out a lot closer. And then all of a sudden, when he looked up, there was this enormous ship, a cigar-shaped ship. If I believe it was about equivalent to a 14-story building. Is what it, as it was described.
And we don't hear about cigar-shaped UFOs much anymore, but back in the day, back in that time period, they were much more common, right?
Exactly. And then what makes this interesting is that the object maneuvered around, and then he saw a smaller light being emitted out of the object. It was basically a smaller scout ship, as he called it, that landed nearby. And I forgot one point. He climbed down the tree and he lit a small fire, basically to signal the light. And that's what caused the light to come over to his tree because of the fire. But when he didn't hear any noise, of course, he got very frightened. And he climbed back up the tree. He wore some camouflage hunting clothing. So as this light that emitted from the object turned out to be a small scout ship landed, he then noticed these small humanoid beings walking around, observing basically the brushes, the manzanita plants, as what he had described.
I'll tell you what, Reuben, why don't we listen to an audio clip? I'm not sure, when was this particular interview conducted, by the way?
It was in September of 2005.
Okay, there's a clip, clip number four, Dan. If you'd play that, he talks about the arrival of what he described as these humanoids.
Yeah.
And I heard some thrashing through the brush in probably 5-10 minutes. These two humanoids come out of the brush. Then they came straight underneath the tree and looked up at me, and I knew right then I was fingered. Looked like 4 or 5 feet, and they had a silvery, like a one-piece suit on. I could see the two like eyes that were looked like welding goggles to me, and then the rest of the face was kind of a blur. I couldn't see looking down at them.
Noe, would you describe in greater detail what these things looked like? We put some images that you provided, images from the book, on the Coast to Coast website if anybody wants to follow along. But give me some more detail about what these two little beings looked like.
Yeah, it's a fascinating description that's been given by this eyewitness. And he said that the humanoids were about 5 feet tall with black, flat-looking faces. There appeared to be no features to the face other than two very large, circular, dark eyes. At first appearance, it seemed to him that those big, round eyes looked sort of like somebody wearing welder's goggles.